find out.
Because we have, we're supposed to have a TV back tomorrow. It's a good view.
Good evening and welcome to this Monday, October 24th edition of our regular meeting of the Brecksville Broadview Heights City School District, being held in the Brecksville Broadview Heights High School Auditorium. This meeting is a meeting of the Board of Education in public for the purpose of conducting the school district's business and is not to be considered a public community meeting. There's time for public participation during the meeting as an indicated agenda item. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernauer?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ms. Mager, any addenda items?
No.
The first thing we get to do tonight is really a lot of fun. It seems like it's an annual event that's well participated in, which is the National Merit Semifinalists and Commended Students Awards. Mr. Mueller.
Thank you. Good evening. Good evening, everyone. I agree with Mr. Jansen that each year this is an opportunity to present to the community those students from our schools and our communities who, through their achievement on the PSAT National Merit Scholarship Qualifying Test taken in the fall of the junior year, identify them as the top students in the United States of America. We know that our kids are great. We believe that all of us have done to direct our students gives them the opportunity to really provide a very clear picture of what they're capable of. But every school across the state and around the nation kind of sweats it out a little bit in the spring following that fall administration to see whether or not any of the kids that we know are so bright and capable are going to be recognized nationally by being invited to be participate in the National Merit Scholarship process. This year, our anxiety was allayed by the identification of a number of members of the class of 2017. Each fall, 1.5 million American high school juniors take the PSAT for an opportunity to participate in the National Merit Scholarship process. The National Merit Scholarship Corporation identifies two distinct groups of achievers on the PSAT NMSQT. Those students scoring in the top 1% nationally of 1.5 million juniors, or students with one of the top 15,000 scores in the nation, are identified as National Merit semifinalists, and they are invited to continue in the National Merit Scholarship competition. Those students scoring in the top 3% or in the remainder of the top 50,000 scores nationally are recognized for their achievement with the designation of National Merit Commended Scholar. While they are not continuing in the National Merit Scholarship process, designation as a National Merit Commended Student in American high schools opens the doors for a variety of post-secondary opportunities and scholarship opportunities for the individuals named. We're going to recognize our students. I wanted to make sure everybody's here. Just to give you some idea, in the class of 2017, we had 26 students who scored in the top 2%. And we thought, my goodness, that should do it. But because national merit scores are scaled by state nationally, Sometimes the scale score, the index score, they're indexed by state, I should say. Sometimes the index score to qualify for National Merit Scholar is set higher. This year, the score, the index score for Ohio was set higher. And of those 26 students with scores in the top 2%, 12 of those students from the class of 2017 were recognized by National Merit Scholarship Corporation. I'm going to begin this evening by identifying those commended scholars.
We'll take them alphabetically.
When I call your name, would you please come forward? Justin Bowen. David Durker, who is not with us this evening, as far as I can tell, David. David Durker. Bridget Fallon. Alyssa Holzinger, who is not with us this evening. Brielle Marlowe. Patrick Meng. Jos Prakash, who is not with us. Ryan Seraglio, who is here. And Jaewon Yu. We're going to call you back up to take a picture, so don't get comfortable. Next are those students with a score in the top 15,000 nationally, the top 1% of students on the PSAT in the fall of the junior year. These students, as I said, are identified as National Merit semifinalists and invited to continue in competition for the various types of National Merit scholarships that are available to American high school students. Our four National Merit semifinalists in the class of 2017 are Dana Dosen, Aaron McMahon, Rashiel Raghavan, who is at a academic challenge competition this evening, they were undefeated, and Jessica Wang. These are our top students, and regardless of the type of scholarship that they earn from National Merit, I can tell you that these are the leaders of the class of 2017. They are the ones who are determined to reach a goal, who are determined to solve a problem. They will attend the top schools, they will gain access to the college of their choice, and they will proudly represent our schools, their families, and our communities as they move forward in their futures. I promised a couple of the students that I would say something really cool about all of them. The best thing I can think of, having watched a recent Star Wars movie, or at least the one that's on cable, these are our Jedi Knights. The Force is strong in all of them. Congratulations.
Can we get a group picture?
Everyone, would you come up, guys? Could we have everyone up front for a photo?
I can't tell you that it's comfortable what I
Yeah. No, she does look like it. Exactly. I can't help but
continuing on, item 2C is our Public Education Partners Award being presented by Ms. Bernauer.
Thank you.
Debbie?
As you all know, I attended the second annual conference for Public Education Partners this past Saturday in Dublin, Ohio. And just so people know what that is, Public Education Partners, I'm going to refer to it as PEP because it's a lot easier from here on out, is actually a statewide coalition of parents and teachers and school board members and superintendents and citizen groups that aren't even necessarily associated with education but are interested in protecting it. And the two goals of the organization are to advocate for public education and their students, and also to raise awareness with the citizens of things that are happening, the challenges that public schools in this state are facing today. They talk about high-stakes testing and charter school accountability and funding. And I guess this award would sort of fall under the funding umbrella. In addition to some great keynote speakers and breakout sessions, they honored two of our state senators that have worked very, very hard for public schools. One is Senator Peggy Lehner, who is the chair of the Senate Education Committee, and Senator Joe Schiavone. So they were both honored at this particular conference. In addition, and this is the award that I'm bringing you tonight, so far I believe there have been 75 school districts in the state of Ohio that have billed the state for the funds that they have lost to failing charter schools in their districts. And in our case, we billed the state for $2,752,562, which were taken from our budget between 2002 and 2016. So on behalf of PEP, I'm just going to show you real quick, nice sparkly award. It just says, Public Education Partners officially acknowledges the Brecksville Broadview Heights City School District as a public education protector for passing a resolution to invoice the state of Ohio for charter school deductions from the school district, state, and local funding. So I'm going to pass this along to Rick and Joelle, and you can find the appropriate spot for it, whatever that might be. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Debbie.
You're welcome.
And for spending the time going to those meetings as well. Item 3 on the agenda is community communications, hearing of the public. Does anybody wish to be heard this evening? Seeing none, I will continue on to item 4 and dispense with reading the paragraph I normally read in that case. Item 4 is President's Announcements. 4A, recommended to approve and appoint a Cuyahoga Valley Career Center Board Representative. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
You can have it.
Any comments or questions?
Yes. So for the 2017 year, we have the unique opportunity to have a second board seat at CVCC. We started this selection process in August, and we had 5 candidates that met the qualifications. After reviewing all the applications and interviewing the candidates, we selected James Gilbride. I asked Mr. Gilbride to say a few words of introduction about himself. So would you like to come up to the podium, Mr. Gilbride?
Good evening. My name is Jim Gilbride. I'm a 20-year resident of the school district. My wife and I have lived here 20 out of the last 25 years. We have 3 kids in the school district. I have a son that just graduated last year, son who's a junior, and our third son will enter the first grade next fall. My background, I spent 20 years as a sales executive. I then had an opportunity to run a business with 2 partners. In that role, in that business, my role effectively was a CFO. We grew that business from 0 to 250 heads, 5 locations, just under 100 million in sales. We divested of that, and currently my role and my position is area president for Focus CFO. We are currently a part-time fractional CFO service into small and medium-sized business. In my role, I'm talking to business owners constantly, and one of the consistent themes you hear from the business owners is a lack of ability to find qualified employees to work on the floor in manufacturing spaces, to work in entry-level positions in accounting spaces, and also in the insurance industry, to name a few that I've seen recently. So when I saw this opportunity, it was a nice opportunity for me to give back to the community, to use my skills that I've had in my current and former roles and try to join the business community with the school needs. Questions? Anything? Thank you again.
If I could just make a couple of other comments. As Kathleen alluded to, we had 5 candidates step forward. This board is highly appreciative of the interest in this role shown by all of the applicants and by their interest in supporting the community and in hopefully future ways they can support the education system here. As you're probably aware, this role is for a 1-year time period commencing in January. It is the rotating position that each of the 8 districts involved in CVCC get. So it also goes dovetails with the statutory limit that Ms. Mack will have, so she'll be stepping off that board spot a year from January. So you can see, obviously, as we're trying to dovetail this and move it forward. So we're very happy to have Jim here. As Jim mentioned, he brings a wealth of experience in private business, and he knows the community very well from a business perspective, which is invaluable for helping CVCC do its job. So perhaps we ought to have a vote first. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernauer?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. And now please join me in a warm and sincere welcome of congratulations to Mr. Jim Gilbride. Item 5, board member committee reports. Financial liaison, audit ongoing.
The audit is in process, as we talked before. I anticipate they'll be here a few more weeks, and nothing of interest to report beyond that.
PI?
Yeah, the Permanent Improvement Committee met last Thursday. I'm trying to remember, at any rate. received a report on our power project, if you will, with EUS. As it turns out, it appears that we are actually a bit ahead of even the savings that we had anticipated having at this point on a monthly basis. Which may then turn into a more rapid completion of the 10-year commitment. It's also a part of what's going on. So that project overall has turned out at this stage, which I guess it's not quite a year old, but still starting out very positively, and it looks as though that was a very good decision to go forward with that. We are also continuing to look at our facility planning and discuss that as well during that meeting, and we'll have probably an action plan for that going forward pretty shortly.
Thanks, Mike. Mm-hmm. Transportation appeals? Always good. Board Policy Committee has not met. I think we're meeting Friday.
Friday morning.
Mm-hmm. Friday morning. CVCC?
Oh, we appointed Mr. Gilbride. We just celebrated our 45th anniversary at CVCC. We have a joint board dinner coming up where all the boards get together on November 3rd.
STEM? Mm-hmm. Any other reports from the board?
Foundations, we have secured a date. It's March 4th. It's what was our beach ball. We're changing it. It's something like Sippin' Scholars or something of that nature. Does that sound right,
yeah.
Joel? It's going to be at St. Joseph Byzantine, which is right on 21. We've secured a band, and the exciting thing is that we're still working on is we're hopefully going to have CVCC cater it for us. So our culinary students that we have there, we just have to look at basketball season because one of our culinary students is a big basketball player. So we're just really trying to incorporate that and have that's a good opportunity for us and our parents to see the role CVCC plays in our district. And that's it.
Thanks, Kathleen. Item six is our superintendent's announcements.
I have a couple. Just wanted to wish best wishes and good luck. We have several teams that are going to be competing starting this week and some regional and district playoffs. So good luck to our cross-country teams that are going to Boardman on Saturday to compete in regionals. Our girls volleyball team is in the district semifinals at Solon on Wednesday evening. If they win, they will go to the Final Four on Saturday, play Saturday at 4 p.m. at Solon. And to our girls soccer team, tomorrow district playoffs at North Royalton. And should they be successful and win as well, they will move on and play on Saturday at Padua. So good luck to all of our teams that will be competing this week. We met in our calendar committee last week. We had representatives from BEA, from BOSS, to work together to come up and get some feedback on a calendar for the 17-18 school year. In addition, we sent out a survey to parents. We had over 997 responses to that survey. We were very pleased with the response that we got to elicit feedback on what they thought was important in our school calendar. So we've taken all of those recommendations, we've analyzed those responses from parents, had a very great conversation in committee, and we came up with a draft that we're looking again with the committee for feedback on calendar. You can expect to see that calendar on the December meeting for approval, possibly November. Current state law, when they made the change over from days to number of hours of instruction, what they put in the law is that for if you went to school this year for say 179 days and your next year's calendar might be 178, you have to have a public hearing 30 days before you take action on that calendar to allow anyone to voice if they have a concern on that. So the calendar draft that we currently have is about a day shorter than what we've gone this year, so we may have to have that hearing if the calendar stays the draft the way it does and there aren't any additional changes. So be looking for that. We can have an approved calendar for 17-18 in December. Moving forward, we'd like to get on a two-year cycle, so we're going to turn around in February and ask you to look at two more years of school calendar so that we can really give our family and our community some time to plan out for the next couple of school years to get us on that two-year cycle of approving calendars. This week we have new teacher the Kiwanis dinner on Thursday. I will be presenting there and will be joined by all of our new staff teachers and Brian Wyckoff as well, so looking forward to that evening.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Item 7 is our superintendent's consent agenda consisting of certified recommendations, classified and supplemental recommendations found in tabs 2, 3, 4. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
In your certified recommendations, you're going to see a resignation and a recommendation for the same position. Just the timing of those, we were able to secure another candidate that we're very excited for the physics position at the high school. Classified recommendations, if we look at our FTEs in the beekeepers, we are actually up 1.94 FTEs, but that's due to an increase in enrollment into the beekeepers program. Overall, in BOSS, our FTE is actually down as a total of 0.9.
Comments, questions? Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernauer?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Number 8, superintendent's other business consisting of items A through G, tabs 5 through 10. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second. Okay. Item A is a resolution that I have before you. It is a recommendation of the auditor at state that we have something that acknowledges that the board allows for us to give complimentary passes to members of our community or to our staff. There is nowhere that is required in law for you to have a policy around that. It's just a recommendation from the auditor and also a recommendation from the people that we use that do our policy to say you might just want to have a resolution. Be it that the auditor is out here now, we thought it might be a good idea to have it on board agenda that we pass a resolution, just indicating that that is something that we do. Typically, our administrators will get those complimentary passes because they do help provide supervision at some of those events, both home and away. Our current staff right now, teaching staff, they do go to their home events, the sporting events free of charge. That practice is not going to change. That is still something that will be allowed to do with that same understanding that they're helping with supervision, but because that doesn't apply to all events, they are not included in this resolution. Our senior citizens that we provide passes for to come to some of our events, they are included as well. Item B, the independent nursing contract is for a special needs student at one of our elementary schools that, according to their IEP, requires round-the-clock nursing services, so that is an independent contract that we have with that student's current nurse. It was more cost effective to contract with her rather than going through PSI, which we have done for some other nursing services this year. Item C is our standard contract with the Cuyahoga County Board of Developmental Disabilities. They work with us with our kids who have communication devices. It is a no cost, it's just a service agreement that we have with them. It's no cost to the district. You were given the Beekeeper Parent Handbook to review. It's just a standard, just like as we approve other student handbooks and parent handbooks, this is another handbook for you to consider. Western Cuyahoga County Schools Crisis Counseling Team membership is who we used for our mobile crisis unit when they have come into our school district this year. It is their agreement. We received several donations in memory of Billy Franks and Garrick Bach, which are indicated under tab 10 for you. And continued enrollment for a student whose family moved after the start of her senior year, according to our policy at 5111. It is something that we approved by you will allow a student to continue to finish out their senior year.
Yeah, the list of donors who stepped forward with respect to memorial donations is quite lengthy. I think in summary, I'd just like to recognize the approximately $3,000 that were generously given by members of our community and thank them very much for their sentiments at a tough time in our school's school year. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernauer?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Item 9, Treasurer's Consent Agenda, consisting of items A through D, tabs 11, 12, and 13. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Mr. Burdine?
Thank you. In light of presenting the forecast tonight, I'll just quickly talk about the September financial statement, because next month we will use the October forecast numbers, assuming your approval for the monthly analytics of variance that we utilize. So, for September, we are at a balance of about $280,000 favorable $30,000 of that is on the expense side. The rest is on the revenue side. And as you may recall from last month, because nothing significant changed with this since August, the real estate tax portion had come in a little higher than projected for the first half settlement. The public utility tax was a little less than expected for the first half settlement. And we had received the special education tuition payments from ODE that were expected in June of last year. Those weren't paid by the state until this fiscal year, so we had a variance there. All of those variances have been captured in the forecast that I will talk about tonight to at least have those first 3 months of estimates 100% accurate. And that will probably be the only time I say that this year, that those variances are 100% accurate. So nothing really significant there. Once taxes are collected, we'll really wait for second half. So with the forecast, and thank you to Mr. Lesh for his laptop here, we'll hopefully not butcher this too badly. This will be on the district website tomorrow as well. This is the September financial report. We'll also have the detailed assumptions, which I believe is about 24 pages. That would be the file that we would submit to the Ohio Department of Education for our semi-annual filing requirement. Table of contents, just by way of introduction, I have updated dates in these, so those of you who've seen this before, not a lot of difference. Tries to give some background perhaps to a first-time reader on our website. Same with this introductory page as well, talking about some of the terminology used. And this page, I think, captures, in essence, the overall big picture of what's going on here. And there's lots of moving pieces that happen in every revenue tab and every expenditure tab of the forecast, of which there are probably about 16 or 18 of those. I've attempted to utilize what I believe to be current property tax collection rates that I know from historical trends here or believe will happen. And those can swing widely based upon payments by large corporate taxpayers in particular. The expense side, I've attempted to put in my belief of projected negotiation settlements. That process is ongoing, as you know. But because of where this forecast leads us, there's only one conclusion, and that's that we need new operating money. So if those who haven't heard that, you can count me as the first to say we are there. It's time. It's been 12 years to date since we have received new money in the school district, and that cannot continue any longer, in my opinion. And I think this proves it out. While we know we've had some slight variances in cash balances at the end of the year, those balances are certainly not to the magnitude of the numbers we're looking at. And my concern becomes as we deplete the revenue down to levels even at $5.2 million in FY18, the longer we delay, the higher the millage needs to become to prolong the next need for additional operating funds. So, and you can see as that deficit spending starts to occur as it's projected for this year, it just continues to get steeper and steeper as we move forward. So the board, I'm only in my fifth year, so I don't take a whole lot of credit for it, but the board has done a tremendous job working with the staff and the community here to elongate the time period since the last new monies were raised here locally. And while we've not had new monies, we know we've also taken the decline in state revenues, and that'll be on a slide coming up as well. So I tried to put the numbers in red where they're red, and I think it definitely tells a picture. This slide is just more of the same to depict that in another graphical representation. Some of these comments I have made and what I've already said. A mill here raises $1 million. You'll see an upside downside chart later on. I have a 5 mil placeholder in there. We've had a 5 mil placeholder in there probably before I got here, but I know since I've been here, and that is just that. It's a placeholder. That's not necessary to say 5 mils is what we need, what we will ask for. We can figure out quickly knowing our valuation here is $1,012 million currently. So the $1 million is really close. to what a mill will raise. So you can quickly see what the math is, recognizing that in any collection year following passage, you only collect a half of that in fiscal year because taxes are collected on a calendar year basis. So the first year after passage is one half for our fiscal collection cycles. All of our levies now are continuing. Previously, there were four that were renewable for 3 and 5 year periods of time. Those have all now been converted to continuing, so we thank our electorate for that. No new levies are included in this because they cannot be. That's a provision in law with the regulations for preparing these forecasts. You can include renewal of an existing renewal, but you cannot include a new levy, so I have not. And our tax collection rates, I mentioned how those have varied widely over the years. If you go back before 2012, you can see about 399 plus percent collection rates that occurred for our communities. But then you can see a dip that happened particularly in 2014 and 15. And where this gets a little tricky when you tie it into the forecast is collection years, again, at the county level, because all other municipalities are on a calendar year, fiscal year. We are not. We're on a July to June. So we do some gyrations with math, all that work out. But you can see last year was more favorable at 99.2%. That's certainly what we hope continues. I'm using 97.9% in this forecast, which is about a four-year average of the past 4 years. So there may be some conservatism in there, but I'd rather come back to you and tell you it's 99.2 than come back and tell you it's 94.5. But again, in the upside downside chart, you'll see at the end, and also it'll be on the website, we do put in there a placeholder item for 1% swing in property collection rates, just so an individual would be able to see the impact that happens with that. A change I made in this forecast from last one, lots of discussion around the state that the state of Ohio will begin to, or continue maybe I should say, to phase out guaranteed state funding. That had happened two biennial budget cycles ago. It did not happen in the past biennial budget cycle, but the state did phase out the TPP reimbursement. So our governor is not fond of guaranteed funding that's not supported by the funding formula that the state uses to fund public education. The staff that prepares the software we utilize for the forecast, and you've heard me say before, I think they are as knowledgeable as anyone in the state about what might happen with school funding, next to perhaps legislators who actually will decide. In my training this year, they talked about expect at least a 2% annual decline. Obviously, they hope that doesn't occur. I went to the conference, though. It was in Athens, Ohio, and I have to tell you, when you're in Athens, Ohio, no one feels sorry for Northeast Ohio and Brecksville, Broadview Heights. They looked at me like I was the millionaire treasurer sitting in the room, because they come from some very, very poor districts where they don't talk about $1 billion of valuation or anything close to it. They are some serious near poverty level districts. So there wasn't a lot of sympathy in that particular room for phasing out guarantees. I'll remain optimistic. We'll fight for it through the groups with whom we associate. You know, that's one of the tenets of the Alliance for High Quality Education, of which we're a member, and that's something we will work on as this biennial budget process begins next calendar year, early 2017. I mentioned the TPP phase out. We received $1.46 million last year. It was 1.7 the year prior. We had a partial phase out of that. There was some other legislation that created some reimbursement dollars. Additional phase out of that this year takes us to zero. That funding is gone. You go ahead, Mr. Dozier.
Yeah, Rick, so on the state foundation decline of 2%, can you talk about what kind of funding are we getting in that bucket, and what is a 2% decline?
4.7 million. So it's about 100 grand, a little under 100 grand. Each year for 18 to 21. And that was the best information these folks had to say, you know, obviously, I don't think they hope they're right. I think they just wanted to be realistic with what they're hearing, because they do engage a lot of legislators. Their firm is hired by some of the legislative groups to do work on their behalf with running simulations.
What was the discussion or the plan from the state to phase it out? If it was 2% a year, was that kind of, that was going to be a long, slow process to phase it out, or?
Yes, a long, slow process to phase it out. Well, what they hope is you eventually get to the formula. At some point, the formula and the guarantee lines will cross.
What does the formula have for us in terms of state funding?
We get $1,200, $1,300 a kid at the end of the day after everything that happens, but we're probably 400 to 500 students on to the guarantee. So our enrollment would have to grow 400 to 500 students to become a formula district, and if we grew 400 to 500 students and had to hire staff to educate that amount of students, that's not a mathematical dimension we probably want to explore. Those expenses will exceed any amount of revenue we would ever receive from the state, not to mention space utilization and other issues.
So what is in the state legislation right now in terms of this decline? For next year, is it in the
budget? There's no state legislation past June 30th.
Okay.
So that'll be the biennial budget process right. That will happen early 2017.
Okay.
We will get actively involved with that. And that's where we will also get involved with the TPP to try to continue that further as well. I think I misspoke earlier, because I think I said it's 1.46 this year, 1.7 last year, zero for FY18, 19, and on. So we do have money this year. And with the way that breaks out, because of the way the state's paying it, there's a piece of the FY17 money that won't come in until 18 after final enrollments for this current school year are determined. Those don't happen until after the school year is concluded. So I have, I think, 15% withheld that what I would expect to receive in FY18, but it's really 17 money. They never did those types of delayed payments until FY16 with some that's held to 17. So then the new budget will determine TPP, and it will determine phase out of guaranteed funding.
But what they will tell you is in FY17 and 18, they're increasing the foundation amount by $100, so that they will tell you that you're getting $100 more per kid. Well, that's not true, because it applies to what our state index is, and we would get that amount based on what we get from the state to begin with. So they might say, well, we're giving you $100 more per kid, but no one gets that guaranteed amount. Our portion of that will end up being probably around $6 a child.
Wow.
I have in here 4 teacher retirement, staff attrition going forward. In the last 2 or 3 years have been far above that because of the STRS retirement rule changes. Previous to that, we probably were somewhere between 3 and 6 prior to my time in the district. I think 4 is a reasonable planning number. It could end up being higher, but there's no reason right now, when you look at our most senior staff with where they are, at least in terms of years of experience, they wouldn't necessarily appear to be retirement eligible, but there are other ways to become retirement eligible with a combination of age and service credit. I don't get into a full analysis of all of those, because that's an individual decision. And when I start to try to pick those, I guarantee you I'll be wrong. Insurance costs, you've heard me talk about this before, but we incurred a 7.22% medical and 22.65% prescription increase this year. Overall, the blended increase on that, I believe, was like 10.17%. I had been using 8 in the forecast. Now I'm using 10 for 18 to 21 fiscal years. Just kind of hedging my bet on that. That's one where I hope I'm wrong and we realize savings. We spend about $5 million a year in insurance premiums. So, you know, a percentage or 2 or 3 can obviously swing that. We've had huge success with the Suburban Health Consortium rate increases over the years. This is not one of those huge successes, and we will pay as a result. I've tried to capture here, and I won't spend a whole lot of time on this, but I tried to capture what the major changes were from the forecast. Last forecast, I was using nothing really in personnel costs. I knew step increases would resume. I didn't have anything in for negotiation settlements, so I have incorporated that now. I was using 8% for insurance benefits instead of 10 that I'm using now. Also, we know there's some fixed retirement, Medicare, workers' compensation costs that occur related to salary increases, so that's that big number there. Several things happened in the real estate intangible collections. Mr. Jansen is a wonderful board member on behalf of all of you with reviewing this forecast. I think we met for an hour and 45 minutes one day, and this board is really bright and capable. Those who don't know that or believe that should come in and listen to some of the question and answer sessions that happened. But we had a great meeting, and we were digging into how do you get to the 913, because part of that's property tax collection rate, part of that's a change in homestead exemption, that we have a reduction in our eligible taxpayers in the community by about 50 some thousand dollars a year. So we don't get that from the state, it kicks into the local. So there are a lot of moving parts that happened in the tax collection piece that we looked at for this particular forecast. The other items I mentioned with the state aid, that's the beginning of that phase out that I talked about of the guaranteed funding. The other items you can see, but overall it's about a $5 million change. And I go through and try to balance what that is to the last forecast and make sure I don't have errors built within that. The other piece is the third bullet at the bottom is last year we ended with $833,000 more in cash than we had predicted in the forecast. So obviously that all carries over. It doesn't go into any slush fund or any magical pot of gold or anything like that. It sits there, it's very transparent. And that with the $171,000 would be the $600,000 favorable variance you would see reported in the summary on the full forecast document as to why the overall projected balance is changing. Upside downside I've mentioned, that just kind of explains what it is. I interestingly also at the Athens seminar I was at, more and more districts, they don't necessarily call it upside downside, but more and more districts, including the software developers, are starting to utilize some of these concepts with explaining the variances monthly, forecast to forecast. They have a forecast compare slide in there. They've had that for a few times now, but they're also starting to say, okay, things will be wrong in this. I've told you many times, as soon as you approve it, it'll be wrong tomorrow. But being able to explain why it's wrong, why you have variance is important, but also what are those things that someone might look at and say, okay, well, what happens if it's wrong? So we've tried to capture, as I mentioned, the $5 million new money levy. You can put two in there and you can put eight in there and it drives $1 million. And we've put out in the comment side for the $5 million, $2.5 million in the fiscal year past, and that's the difference in collection year versus fiscal year. So the other items I won't go through, but I've tried to give a little explanation related to what those do, where they come from, and if anybody ever has questions, you're always free to call or email or stop by, and be happy to go over it all. Two pages of those, and they are hierarchically ranked in terms of impact on the forecast. So. And this is just the website for the state, because we do submit this to the Department of Education. When you go in there, it's easy to find the numbers part of the forecast. It's sometimes a little trickier to find all the assumption stuff. So truthfully, it is easier to find it on our website under financial reports, and it will be there tomorrow, and we have a whole bunch of them there going back in time, and we like to keep that out there for the public to be able to access. Additional questions?
I guess I'd just like to make a comment. I really appreciate that you got out there and said the time is now. Because I know we've talked about this for a couple of years, and when I looked at these figures, I'm concerned that we actually waited a little too long, to be honest. We have staff, I think probably most of them are making less than they were making 6 years ago because of freezes and increased health insurance and retirement contributions. We have parents, I've heard from a few in just in the last couple of weeks, that can't afford to have their kids in some of the sports or other extracurricular activities. You know, they're paying 100% of the pay to play. We have a state government. I don't even know how they figure out their budgeting, but I know that we can never count on them to do what's right. I mean, I'm hoping that with this next budget that we all can get down there and really fight for them to do something so that schools know what they can actually count on. And I know nobody likes new taxes, but I really do think we are at a crossroads and we are going to need the community to come forward and help us out and to continue having the types of schools, the excellence that we have right now. So thank you.
To your point of the state revenue, if you really dive into the details of the revenue side, and there's a whole lot of pieces that move in there, as I said earlier, but the vast majority of the revenue reductions you see as we move forward in this forecast are state sources. Mm-hmm. Our local taxpayers have been very good with what they pay, our collection rate. Districts around here would love to talk about 99% collection rates. That's incredible to have a 99% collection rate. And some of you know I'm also treasurer at the Career Center. I have 8 districts there. And I think all of those districts would like to have 99% collection rates. So we do very, very well here with our taxpayers really paying. They pay timely. We do carry a little bit of delinquency. Some of that's timing, but our revenue losses, and if that went back to about FY11, you'd see another, we were at $3.5 million at a point in the past in terms of whether you want to call it tangible personal property being paid locally by commercial taxpayers, which then the state said we're going to provide hold harmless TPP payments from us. They implemented a CAT tax that people talk about still, and we were receiving $3.5 million. That is forecast to be zero in FY18. That's a lot of money. And take that times 4 in this forecast, that's 14 million, and I think I talked about 17 point something deficit. We'd be talking about $3 million, which is a totally different number for a balance. It's a totally different number for a levy request. It's a totally different discussion about the frequency of levies, the timing of levies. It's a huge loss. The state will tell you that they've made up that funding otherwise. It's just not true. It is not true. I don't care who says it's not true. They can't prove it. I can prove they're wrong. So.
We trust you.
From a macro standpoint, we see trends. You know, state pushing taxation from a state level to a local level. It is true. Income taxes in the state of Ohio are going down. It's also true that local taxes are not. In fact, that's where you make it up. We've also seen macro trends where the taxes on businesses are effectively being transferred, TPP, to residential property owners. Those are outside influences that go along with things like insurance for reasons out of our control, increasing at multiples of inflation for years on end. Unfortunately, the money that a board in this state spends on insurances, to the board it doesn't matter where the dollar goes, but it does matter to the district. I mean, that dollar that goes into insurance is somewhat invisible to people, but I'll tell you what, it's if it's going there, it's not going into programming and it's not going into paychecks. You know, so the challenges remain for this and every other district in the state. We think we're staying vigilant. You know, occasionally we read in the paper about some districts that perhaps are not. We're being realistic. There's no sweeping things under the rug. That isn't going to help us in the long term. We're trying to be proactive, and we're trying to keep our eyes set on being sustainable. Being able to declare victory in 1 year if we know it's going to lead to trouble down the road, that's not where this board and this administration want to go. So we've got a lot of challenges in front of this board, in front of the community, in front of our district. But that's what we're working on. If there are any questions, please give me a call, or as Rick said, take him up on it. He'll go through lots of detail with you if you wish. Any other comments or questions? Roll call.
I have two other items. Item C, Fund 001, the decrease in that budget of $45,000 is really the culmination of preparing the forecast, looking at, I won't tell you I look at every line item budget, but any of significance I do. So we have an overall decline of about $45,000. So I want to reflect that in what is appropriated to be in the system for folks to be able to access for expenditure. Fund 003 is our estimated tax receipts for this year as well as carryover balance. We meet once or twice a year with Mr. Code for facilities, Mr. Schenker, technology, and Mrs. Nedzwicki for the curriculum side, books and things that we, textbooks we buy. So we've allocated those funds for this year. May not spend them all because there's some things we might defer out into future fiscal years. Mr. Code in particular, he's a late spender because he likes to hold back in the event we have a big emergency that might dictate reprioritizing our expenses. So this would be the full amount that we anticipate receiving in this year. Items 3 through 12 are all grant driven, and those are increases and decreases based upon allocations that we know we will have in this particular fiscal year at this time. Some of those will change again. The state recalibrates their funding partway through the year based upon enrollment as well as unspent balances returned by other districts. Item D are the minutes from the last regular meeting and the special meeting that was held October 10th. That's all. Thank you.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernauer?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Item 10, executive session for the purpose of reviewing negotiations or bargaining sessions with public employees concerning their compensation or other terms and conditions of employment per Board Policy 0166, Item E. May I have a motion, please?
We took that off.
That was actually stricken from the agenda.
Yes.
Oh, I'm reading the old one.
That's okay.
This is even more fun. Item 10 is now adjournment. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernauer?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. We're now adjourned. Thank you very much for attending.